Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Welcome to a special edition of Fire Marshal's Corner and Campus Firewatch Radio. My name is Ed Camo, and in this month's episode, we're going to be talking about photoelectric or ionization smoke alarms. Which is the right one to use? This is a lot of controversy that's going on across the country. You know, smoke alarms have an unquestioned role in reducing the loss of life and injuries from fire. But there's a lot of recent information coming to light about how the two predominant types of smoke alarms, photoelectric and ionization, react to different fire scenarios. Television stations across the country are conducting demonstration burns to measure the response time of the different smoke alarms, and they're coming out with some pretty troubling results. The National Institute of Standards and Technology published a report in 2004 that clearly indicates photoelectric reacts quicker to smoldering fires and ionization smoke alarms react faster to flaming fires. So we're going to really take a look at that on this podcast today. So we're starting out with an interview with firefighter Matthew Seaton from the Barry City, Vermont Fire Department, where they had a tragic fire that claimed five lives. And really what troubled the fire department was the fact that there were working smoke alarms that did not sound during the fire. After him, we're going to talk to Underwriters Laboratories Manager of Consumer Affairs, John Dragenberger, discussing the role that UL has had and their position on the issue. Then joining us is Chris DeBay, who's Vice President of Codes and Standards from the National Fire Protection Association. And then we finish up with Fire Marshal Bill Degnan talking about the concerns that he and his peers have about the issue and what they're doing in response. Something really important, though, did happen is after we taped all these interviews, the National Institute of Standards and Technology informed me that based on the inquiries I had been making to them regarding the reported poor performance of dual-sensor smoke alarms in comparison to the standalone smoke alarms, this data was being removed from their report, which was published in 2004 and then updated again in 2007. It turns out that the dual-sensor smoke alarms were not co-located with the single-sensor smoke alarms, which is the reason for dramatically different results. So during the interviews today, you're going to be hearing a lot of reference to the performance of these dual sensor smoke alarms. It turns out, as I just mentioned, that they were located in different locations during the test, which made their response worse. NIST didn't respond to questions about why they did it this way and actually where they were located in relation to the fire and the other smoke detectors. So we're continuing to look into it and see what more we can find out. So sit back and listen to this really interesting show on smoke alarms, photoelectric, or ionization. My name is Ed Camo.
Radio at firehouse.com.
All right, joining us right now is Matt Seaton, who's a firefighter with the Barry City Fire Department up in Vermont. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you for having me. This is an honor.
All right. Barry City Fire Department had a pretty unique incident, or perhaps it's maybe not unique, Matt, and maybe you can fill us in on that and what has happened afterwards.
Absolutely. In December of 2005, our fire department here suffered a tragic fire. We responded to an apartment fire, a second floor apartment fire. When crews arrived, basically the second floor was fully engulfed. Crews made an attempt to get in to rescue the occupants, but were forced back. We had water issues, and then the amount of fire in the home was extreme. In the fire, we tragically lost four children and their mother perished. Firefighters were able to rescue the father, and one other victim was able to jump out of a second floor window on his own. Subsequently to that, we started investigating, obviously, and what was found in the investigation was the home was protected by hardwired working ionization smoke detectors. The house had passed a minimum housing inspection just a month before the fire and was found to be in excellent condition. So as firefighters, why didn't the smoke detectors wake up the family soon enough? And we started investigating this, and that's where we've gotten today. When we came across the information that ionization smoke detectors weren't detecting fires quick enough.
Okay. Now, what kind of fire was this? What was the cause of the fire? What was the fuel load that happened?
It's believed to have been either smoking material, Christmas decorations, or an unattended candle left by a couch. The couch was the actual ignition point The foam batting would have been the material that the incident started at.
Now, you say they were working smoke alarms, so after the fire, were they tested and found to be operational?
Yes, sir. All the smoke detectors that were still in a condition that could be tested were still found to be operating. They were hardwired with battery backup.
So, in other words, you're saying it's kind of a scenario where clearly the smoke alarms should have reacted to the situation. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. The public is believed that if we have smoke detectors in our homes, we should be well protected, that we should have early warning. The fire department received the call at 5:58 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty common thing across America, these fires that are happening at 3 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m.
So what happened afterwards? Okay, you had this fire, you had these findings. What are some of the next steps that the fire department took?
Well, what we came across was some information by Deputy Chief Fleming of the Boston Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that came out was that he said was ionization smoke detectors don't detect a smoldering fire. To us, that was kind of a ridiculous statement. You know, we've been trained as firefighters here in Vermont that any smoke detector with the UL listing is a good smoke detector and the type that you want in your home, that you'll have an early detection. So we started doing more research after hearing what he had said, and we came across a website by an Australian group that had a test of a aquarium test, basically, where they had placed two smoke detectors in an aquarium and showed that an ionization wouldn't react until almost a fatal level of smoke was in the chamber. And as firefighters, we believe half of what we hear and even less of what we see. So we decided to do the test on our own. And we did the test, and we got the exact same results. It came back that people said that our test was unscientific and didn't really matter because a fish aquarium doesn't count. A fish aquarium is not the same thing as a real house.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and did the exact same thing in a real house, full scale. We used soldering iron in a couch. We actually have it on video. I believe it's on firehouse.com now.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the same results. The ionization detector didn't activate for an hour and 6 minutes, whereas our photoelectric smoke detector, the first one activated at 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that more and more of these are happening across the country. And it's like you said, these aren't necessarily scientific tests, but they do seem to be replicating real-world conditions to a degree to find out how these things perform.
Exactly. We've never claimed to be scientists. We kind of joke that we're just a bunch of dumb firemen who took a couch, stuck a soldering iron in it, and had multiple smoke detectors that we expected to go off.
Mm-hmm.
This is real life. This isn't a lab. This is not scientific data. This is what is happening in people's homes across the country.
Mm-hmm. So the big question that everybody's kind of struggling with is, okay, what do we do? NIST did a great study that came out on this. There's a lot of data in it. Fire departments such as yours are doing this. We see a lot of this stuff on the television stations doing this kind of testing. What are you telling people up in Barrie City, Vermont?
Well, the important thing is that photoelectric technology will save lives. We here in the city, in the state of Vermont right now is looking at legislation to require photoelectric smoke detectors in homes across the state, new homes and some existing homes. What's important and what we feel here in the city is that photoelectrics will save lives. But at the same time, you must give people the information that an ionization smoke detector has its place in the fire service. It does detect open flaming fires quicker than photoelectric. So having the use of dual sensor smoke detectors or both technologies in the right spaces is invaluable to my family and to the families of the listeners.
I think the important thing to stress is that any smoke detector is better than no smoke detector, and then what we're finding is there are varying levels of detectors within that.
Exactly.
But it's critically important to have a detector in there.
Absolutely. And if you're going to go with one type of smoke detector, you need to go with photoelectric. There's so much information out there, and people are more than welcome to contact us on this. When you're dealing with the reaction times, on average, dealing with a smoldering fire, you're looking at 30 minutes to 40 minutes slower for an ionization to activate to a smoldering fire. Whereas with a fast flaming fire, you're looking at 30 to 40 seconds difference.
Mm-hmm.
So the photoelectric by far is the important technology for my fellow fire service to be putting out to their community.
I think it's kind of troubling, though, in looking at all the NIST data, is the performance of the dual sensor smoke alarms. I kind of thought, and I mentioned this in one of the other interviews, too, that this was kind of the best of both worlds. But it looks like it may not be, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I can't answer to how they manufacture these. We find similar data. I know that in our test, the dual sensors did activate before the single technology ionization.
I know, but and looking at the numbers, you know, it's from the NIST thing. It's kind of unfortunate. And we're going to have a link to the NIST report so people can take a look at it and look at it themselves and kind of make these judgment calls. But there's just so much information out there that we really need to start cutting through all this and try to come up with answers for the fire service out there in terms of what to do, because, like you said, we don't want smoke alarms to get a bad rap. We want to make sure that people are using them and are keeping them in place. It's just that, you know, maybe we can do better.
Absolutely. The message that, you know, any UL-rated smoke detector is kind of changing for this fire service. I think that as a service, we need to start promoting the best technology for homes across the country. The statistics show that, you know, there are fatal fires routinely from smoking material and smoldering type fires.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking with Matthew Seaton, who's a firefighter up with the Barry City, Vermont Fire Department, where they had a tragic fire that really started down the road of taking a look at the different technologies that are out there when it comes to smoke alarms and probably what's the most appropriate in there. So we really appreciate you joining us today, Matt.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Ed Camo.
Radio at Firehouse.com.
And joining us now to talk about the whole issue of the photoelectric versus ionization smoke alarms is John Dragenberger, who's the manager of consumer affairs from UL. Thanks for joining us, John.
It's my pleasure.
Right. Well, as you're well aware, this is kind of a controversial issue that's gaining more traction across the country because so many fire departments and fire marshals are looking for guidance on, okay, there's, you know, we have these two technologies out there, photoelectric, ionization, and then we've got dual sensor in one unit, and we're seeing a lot of stories in the media, and NIST did a study on it, so maybe you can fill us in a little bit on what UL is doing on this whole issue of photoelectric and ionization smoke alarms.
No, certainly. Well, first of all, Underwriters Laboratories, or UL, strongly recommends the utilization of both the photoelectric and ionization technologies because that optimizes detection and gives consumers the best available escape time in a fire scenario. The other thing that's so important to us, because our corporate mission is public safety, is that having a working smoke alarm in your home is so important. Smoke alarms have, in fact, contributed strongly to the decrease in the number of fire fatalities since they were introduced in the 1970s. And the other thing that we know regarding the photoelectric versus ionization situation is that all fires are so very unique, and fire officials know that very, very well. It depends on available fuel, air movement, size of the room, things of that type. And, you know, we never really know exactly what kind of fire is going to break out, unfortunately. And based on current statistics, smoke alarms of any kind are serving as an effective life-saving tool.
Well, I mean, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that smoke alarms have played an instrumental role in reducing the loss of life from fire over the past few years. But really what's coming to the forefront is that, you know, there are these two different technologies out there. And while you mentioned that fires are unique, there also is a lot of commonality between them, the fire signature that certainly came out of the NIST study that we saw there. And you had mentioned that people should use both types of technologies. Well, kind of the problem is, well, what type do you use and where do you use it? For example, in my living room, well, gee, do I do photoelectric or do I do ionization? Because I can't predict what kind of fire is going to break out. So, you know, what fire marshals and fire chiefs are looking for is guidance in terms of what type to recommend and where. And that's the real struggle people are facing with it right now. What's UL's view on that whole thing?
Well, certainly UL has the role of testing the actual product, the smoke alarm. And there's also something called an installation code that's done by the National Fire Protection Association. And that code basically specifies how many alarms, on what levels, where they should be located. That all is extremely important to the overall safety of the public, too. It's one thing to have a working smoke alarm. It's quite another thing to locate it properly. You mentioned your living room and what kind. Again, either technology will provide you reasonable escape times, and it's something that fire officials are very much in favor of. But what we're concerned about is favoring one alarm detection technology over another could ultimately be detrimental to public safety for a variety of reasons. That's why we are looking at optimizing escape time, and that's why recommending utilization of both types of alarms.
But I mean, again, it really comes back to, I mean, we can't expect people to be putting up two types of smoke alarms side by side. That's just, while that obviously would give us a great level of protection, that's something that's just clearly not going to happen with the general public. And right now, obviously, things are skewed very heavily towards ionization because that's been the predominant one that's out there. That's been the predominant one that the fire departments have been giving out. So right now, we are skewed quite heavily towards ionization, which senses flaming fires very effectively versus photoelectric, which senses smoldering fires. And it would seem that statistics tend to lean also towards more smoldering fires being the common scenario versus open flaming fires. So, you know, everybody's kind of between a rock and a hard place right now in terms of what do we do, what do we say, and there just don't seem to be any real easy answers out there.
Well, and that's something that we have the same feeling about, that there seems to be this dichotomy or even an internal argument within the fire community, but UL is very concerned that any jurisdiction choosing one technology over another could ultimately undermine the advancement of some new superior technologies. Remember, we're talking photoelectric and ionization. There are other types of detection technologies that may rise to the forefront here in the near future, and having a jurisdiction mandating a certain type of technology could ultimately cut off consumers from a much more viable technology that would even enhance escape times more. So the one thing we are concerned about is that there would be any law that would mandate one over another when both, in fact, work. We recommend utilization of both types of technology. And the other thing that we have to say is that steps are being taken and advances are being made to revise current requirements. We're really looking at these requirements. It's not something that we're just listening to. We are actively involved. You know, UL, and I think you're very much aware of this, has more than 300 standards development panels, and of those 300, the one that deals with smoke alarms is probably one of the more active ones. And within that development panel, that standards panel, we have 7 task groups working on various parts of the standard, looking at enhancing escape times, looking at various aspects of sensing technology, and work is being done. And of course, the other important thing is that we collaborate all the time. This is how standards are developed. We use the nationally recognized standards development process accredited by ANSI, the American National Standards Institute. So we gather not only our engineers, but our public safety experts from around the country, fire officials, government officials, all are involved in developing these standards, the existing ones and the newer ones, which are ongoing.
Is UL doing anything specifically on this issue right now, the photoelectric and ionization issue?
Oh, absolutely. We have a task group that is looking at the sensing technologies. We're actually looking at the threshold limits, too, of these smoke alarms. And the reality is that you can make smoke alarms extremely sensitive, but then they have the problem with nuisance tripping. I mean, consumers have the problem with nuisance alarms, and that is something that is ultimately, again, detrimental to public safety, because after too many nuisance alarms, consumers are known to remove batteries, and that's one thing everybody in the fire community does not want to have happen.
I mean, are they doing anything that's rather imminent in terms of this? I know NFPA has a task force report coming out within the next few weeks. Is UL doing anything along the same line of trying to come up with an answer for the fire chief out there that's faced with this dilemma?
Well, the one thing that I know is ongoing and we're working on very hard is and keep in mind our standards routinely change. I mean, this is not unusual. In fact, in the smoke alarm standard, we've had 60 changes since the standard was introduced. So it's a routine matter, and it's not only for smoke alarms. We make changes in our standards for toasters and our standards for medical X-ray equipment and all kinds of different things. So this is a routine matter for us, and we look at evolving hazards, and we of course use scientific study, and of course I mentioned the consensus-based process. But we do the collaboration. The fact is our standards are looking at the newer types of materials used in the construction of homes and the content of homes. And by that, we all know that we're talking about synthetic materials. In particular, polyurethane foam is used so frequently now in our homes, such as cushions and pillows and various mattresses. So that's why our smoke characterization study was something that that we did with the collaboration of the National Fire Protection Association's Fire Protection Research Foundation. And we got a lot of extensive quantitative data and analysis that really expands on previous technical studies to further understand modern fire scenarios. But what it boils down to is the use of synthetics and polyurethane foam, for example, is being considered as maybe an additional test that might ultimately be incorporated into the smoke alarm standard.
Okay. But it sounds like from what you're saying that there isn't anything coming out on this particular issue that the fire chief can look forward to and say, okay, this helps us define what we tell the public, what kind of message we give to the public. This doesn't, you know, what do I tell the legislators across the country who are looking at mandating this sort of stuff? It sounds like there's nothing coming out from UL in the near future on that.
Well, we, of course, are working rather quickly on this. The fact with standards development is that we vet this through all the experts. When we come up with a proposal, it's looked at by others. It might have to be modified. We want the best available standards for public safety, and this is something that's been a hallmark of Underwriters Laboratories for the last 114 years. So would the changes occur quickly? That depends on how you define quickly, but we are moving at full speed. It's a very high priority, and of course, fire officials should know that we now know more than we ever did about fire and smoke, especially in residential fires, and we believe the best approach is to continue to utilize our collective fire science knowledge, theirs and ours, for the advancement of fire safety. Moving forward from that, we again look at collective efforts, including providing a better understanding of the differences in smoke alarms and technologies, and making sure everybody understands this, even the public understands the difference between ionization and photoelectric. And we also, of course, want to provide further insight into how we can all better protect ourselves from residential fire, and I know fire officials are keenly focused on that. And of course, we really encourage continued collaboration in the standards development process.
One area that's becoming really concerning is that of dual sensor smoke alarms, where it seemed like there was the best of both worlds combined in one unit, yet their performance, according to the NIST study, is seriously lagging when it comes to the standalones. And I'm just kind of wondering, do you have any insight as to why that is? I mean, why would the merge of these two technologies into a single unit be worse than the standalones? Can you fill us in on that a little bit, maybe?
Certainly, dual sensor technology is something that is available today, and keep in mind that when those technologies carry the UL mark, it means that they meet the standards and they will provide you with good egress time. And we also have to keep in mind that smoke alarms are just a part of the whole fire safety scenario in a home.
I don't mean to cut you off, but we are going to be running out of time, John, And really, I mean, I'd really like to focus on this. I mean, there are some cases where dual sensors are not even sounding an alarm, whereas the photo and ionizations by themselves do work. You know, And I think I really want to come down to, do you know why this type of unit just is not as effective as a standalone unit?
Certainly. The dual sensor technologies, of course, meet the requirements, but of course we also worry about nuisance alarms. And with dual sensor technology, the nuisance alarms could be extensive simply because they'll react quickly to burning toast, they'll react quickly to steam coming out of a bathroom. These are the kind of things that trip smoke alarms and provide nuisance alarms. So the sensors have to be still within the limits of the standard, but modified to help reduce the nuisance alarms and still provide the best available escape time consistent with the UL standards.
So, in other words, the sensitivity on a dual sensor alarm is different than the standalone? Is that what you're saying?
It possibly could be, depending on the manufacturer's discretion, but the fact is they still meet the standards. So even a dual technology alarm will provide you with time for escape.
I mean, is there a concern among UL, though, that in some of the NIST tests, the dual sensors didn't even go off, whereas the photoelectric or the ionization did?
Well, what happens is you have to look at the overall scenario and smoke obscuration, things of that type. The fact is that the dual sensors may have a different response time just to provide for nuisance alarm situations, but they still meet the requirements of the standard, so UL is not concerned as long as they do meet that standard.
Well, they may meet the standard, but I mean, the fact that they don't activate, I mean, that's a pretty serious deficiency, because if people have just dual sensors throughout their homes, you know, and they don't work, that's, to me, that's a very serious condition. And in my mind, that's a very serious situation that, you know, UL should be considering, the fact that they're not even activating at all in the NIST tests. And I think we can all agree that the NIST tests are pretty definitive ones that we all look to for science.
Well, of course, I didn't see the NIST tests. I don't know exactly how they were done, but saying that dual sensors technologies do not activate is a very definitive statement that certainly is not entirely true. They do work. They do sense smoke, give you an alarm.
Well, I mean, I'll have to argue. I'm looking at the results of them right here, the NIST studies, and it says no alarm, no alarm, no alarm, no alarm in a number of different scenarios. In other words, they never activated at all, which to me is a serious concern, you know, where we have a unit out there that's meeting a UL standard that does not activate under alarm conditions or under fire conditions.
And knowing what those fire conditions are would be an important part of that discussion. It's all based on tenability studies, and is the smoke of such a density that it would prevent people from getting out at the time the alarms did sound. I understand that they did not sound during the demonstration or during the study that was done, but I don't know if it was done specifically in any way. I just wasn't privy to that information.
Well, we've been talking to John Dragenberg, who's the Manager of Consumer Affairs for Underwriters Laboratory. Really appreciate you joining us today, John.
Ed, it's my pleasure. And again, we recommend utilizing both technologies, but certainly having either one will be a benefit to yourself and your family.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all know that smoke alarms have a great track record in saving lives, and we want to make sure that, you know, people have, no matter which technology, at least they have a smoke alarm in place to save their lives. Well, you've been listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. My name's Ed Kamau.
Radio at Firehouse.com.
And joining us now is Chris Dubé, Vice President of Codes and Standards at NFPA. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Hey, Ed. Thanks.
Okay. This whole thing of the photoelectric versus dual sensor versus ionization smoke alarms is really something that's coming to the forefront. A lot of television stations and newspapers are running articles and doing these demonstration tests where they're setting fires and testing the reaction time of the smoke alarms to see what happens, and with some fairly consistent results across the country. And I know that has really stirred up a lot of interest and a lot of activity looking into it. Can you give me a little bit of background on what NFPA is doing on this?
Well, Ed, recently a lot of things have kind of converged at one time. The NFPA Technical Committee on Smoke Alarms has been looking at this for several revisions now, and constantly knowing that there is a difference in the technologies between photoelectric and ionization and how each responds. Fortunately for our technical committees, in the past, since the previous revision of NFPA 72, a lot of information has come out, including the DUNES 2 study as well as the UL smoke characterization report. These feed into our technical committee process, and now they have a lot of the data that they've been hungry for or looking for in order to determine how to best protect with smoke alarms.
Okay. And let's talk about that NIST study, which you refer to as DUNES 2, that really took a look at it. Some pretty fascinating information came out of that in terms of, I think it pretty definitively tells us that for flaming fires, ionization responds best. For smoldering fires, photoelectric responds best.
Right. The report is key in that what it did, it took a very conservative approach in various types of single-family homes to say, based upon a given type of fire, how much time is required to safely egress from the home, with, again, using some very conservative response times and requirements for the most vulnerable of the population. What this does is it shows us, based upon certain smoke obscuration criteria as well as temperatures, it gives us a time that it takes for someone to get out of the house safely before it's untenable or unsurvivable. In the NIST report, they concluded that both technologies provide an adequate amount of safe egress time. However, as you just stated, each one has its pros and cons depending on the type of fire.
And while, you know, I realize I do talk about before conditions become untenable, you know, we want to try to maximize the amount of time because there's so many variables out there, you know, in terms of where a fire occurs, the fuel load, and that sort of thing. And also what I found pretty striking in looking at this information is the performance of the dual sensor smoke alarms in relation to just a standalone photoelectric or a standalone ionization detector.
As you commented, the dual sensors had varying responses depending on the type of fire, and that is one of the items that our technical committee is looking into to determine what is the best protection. Is it a standalone photoelectric? Is it standalone ionization? Or is it the dual sensor technology? Again, each type of fire is so unique. A flaming fire grows much more rapidly and leads to a much more hazardous condition quicker than a smoldering fire. A smoldering fire can burn for a very long time and still have a relatively safe environment. And so what our committee wants to do is ensure that you have that proper amount of time and protection to get people out. Again, as you stated, we want to maximize that amount of time.
And really, probably the most common fire out there that we are encountering, though, is the smoldering fire, isn't it?
I can't comment. I don't believe the data indicates that that is the most common type. The data we've looked at shows it's approximately 50% one, 50% the other, but it's hard to break down that data. We don't know because even a quickly flaming fire starts off initially very short-term smoldering and becomes flaming. And most smoldering fires do transition to flaming. So, again, you can't just broadly make those statements.
Okay. I mean, one of the assumptions that a lot of the fire service is making out there that the leading cause of fatal fires is smoking materials, which generally tends to be a smoldering fire. And like you said, all fires start smoldering and eventually break to flaming, but it's that window of time, how long it takes to make that leap, transition from one stage to another. I would like to come back to the dual sensor one a little bit. I mean, I originally had thought, okay, here we've got the best of both worlds in one unit. And a number of fire departments across the country, too, had that thought, too. One major fire department out west had been looking at promoting this as the solution. But then looking at the data, it just clearly indicates that dual sensors, that's not the sort of situation where it's the best of both worlds. Why is that? What makes a dual sensor not perform as best as a standalone photoelectric or a standalone ionization?
I'm not sure. The committee is looking at that, as I stated, based upon the DUNES report as well as the manufacturers to determine what would show a difference in the response from a standalone photoelectric or a standalone ionization to a dual sensor photoelectric and ionization. One of the areas they're looking at is how sensitive are those devices to ensure that we don't get a lot of false alarms and false activations. So they're looking at that to determine, again, what is the best performing detector that will give, again, the most amount of egress time.
But, I mean, in looking at some of the numbers here, I mean, dual just clearly loses so many times. You know, the response time on these, in some cases, I know it's an extreme one, but it's well above the standalone units. And that really has a number of fire marshals very concerned because, you know, they're struggling with, well, what do we recommend out there? You know, do we recommend photo? Do we recommend ionization? And now they're kind of leaning away from even recommending dual because of the numbers that are contained within the NIST report here are really, you know, like I said, it's troubling and it's difficult for them to make a decision based on the information and kind of the lack of information that's out there as well. especially with all these tests being done by the media. I mean, is this the sort of thing that you're facing, you know, when the media calls you up and says, gee, we're finding this in our tests here, and given they're not scientific tests, but what can a fire chief say? How should they react to something like that?
You know, how we're reacting is exactly how our committee is looking at this. They're saying each technology has its strengths and its weaknesses, and we're trying to determine what is the best road for the public to go down this road, and that's why we're recommending both technologies at this time, NFPAs, in the interim, until our committee can determine what the best approach is. Now, in comment to the demonstrations that you're seeing on TV and things like that, that's what they are. They're demonstrations, and they're often in a very small room, often a burn building, and they produce a level of visibility that the public often isn't aware of, may not be hazardous. It's just smoke obscuration, and the detectors are designed to respond at a certain level of obscuration. And when we combine all this together with the actual data that came out of the Dunes 2, as well as the UL smoke characterization, we can start to clearly document how the detectors respond and what the best choice is, separate from a bunch of demonstrations and ad hoc video features on various detector technology.
Now, you're saying you recommend that people have both technologies in their home. How do you determine what type of detector to put where? Because, I mean, then you're predicting what kind of fire is going to break out in a particular area.
Right, and that, again, that's the problem. We can't predict what type of fires, and that's, again, why we stated earlier that, you know, to state that the vast majority of fires are smoldering fires, that's what's going to be, and X amount of people would be saved because we've accounted for that with having photoelectric, we can't say that. And so what we are saying is if you want to count for both, you need to provide both technologies. Right now, that's the only square we can land on for certainty. We know ionization responds much quicker to flaming fires and much earlier on in the development when the fire is growing very quickly. We know that a photoelectric will respond much quicker to a smoldering fire. Combined, they provide the best level of protection. But what we can't say is, you know, as you just said, this type of fire is going to occur in your home based upon these given factors.
So, I mean, for example, in a living room, gee, do I put up ionization? Do I put up photoelectric? I mean, that's the big unknown right now. I mean, because, you know, I could have a smoldering fire in a couch started by a cigarette, or I could have a flaming fire started by some other means in that room. We just don't know.
Right. But what we do know, Ed, and it's very important to stick to this point, is that we know that over the recent history that fire fatalities in homes have been reduced by approximately 50%, and that is due to the presence of smoke alarms. And predominantly, they are ionization. That's just the facts that are out there right now. So we know they perform. We know the detectors each perform within their strengths as well as in their weaknesses and provide a required amount of safe egress time. And we also show that from the Dune study where they looked at very conservative egress times, maximizing that time to get out of the house, and both technologies, photoelectric and ionization, provided enough safe egress time.
And I think you hit the nail right on the head there. So we don't want the public to walk away thinking that smoke alarm technology is bad, because it's just like you just said, we know that it has saved lives over the years. There's just no two ways about it.
Absolutely. There's not a bad choice here, and we don't want the public to feel that if they're making one choice, they're making a bad choice in the other direction. We know that the technologies work, and we know, again, based upon a follow-up study to the original Dune study, we know that both technologies provide that required performance. Do each have strengths and weaknesses? Yes, I think just about any technology faces that. But we know that they work and they have performed over the long term here.
Fill us in a little bit. What is the process that happens with the committee? I mean, I know there's a cycle to the standards, but you can do what they call a TIA in there. I know they're looking at a report that I think the task force report that's coming out soon. Can you fill us in a little bit on that?
Sure. Every 3 years, our fire alarm code, all of our standards, but every 3 years, our fire alarm code undergoes a revision. At that time, people can propose changes, the committee can propose changes, anyone in the public can propose changes. Changes were proposed again this cycle to look at this photoelectric versus ionization. We were aware of this. We were also aware of the Dunes 2 study, the smoke characterization, all this ongoing. So a special task group was formed of the residential committee to look at this very early on, prior to the actual revision started. They were looking at the data, commenting on the various reports that are out there. they've had their first revision part of what's called the Report on Proposals. Now, that'll be published. The public will have a chance to review that, comment on that at a very technical level again. They will have one more set of meetings, which will result in the 2010 edition of NFPA 72. Now, while it's over a two-year process, it seems like a long term. It allows the technical debates to happen and the technical reports to be reviewed in detail so that the correct answer is determined at the end.
But if something of more urgency comes up, there's ability to make quicker changes than within the two to three year of the cycle, right?
Absolutely. What we can have is what's called the tentative interim amendment, where something is of an emergency nature that requires an immediate change to the standard. We have what's called a tentative interim amendment, which allows it to, on four times a year, our NFPA Standards Council meets, the committee can ballot this through, get a public review, and get it to the council for quicker incorporation. A good example of that is the change that went into our life safety code almost immediately following the station nightclub fire.
So when's the task force report coming out?
The first review will be published here in the next month or so, which will include the minutes, basically. It's not an official report. And then the ROP will be published later this spring, in probably about 2 months. We publish what's called the Report on Proposals, which will show all the changes proposed to the fire alarm code.
Okay. I mean, I know I'm probably asking you to predict the future here, but what do you think NFPA is going to be doing in terms of, are they going to be coming out with perhaps some clearer guidelines the fire service across the country can use? Because right now they're just struggling with this. It's a problem that's really starting to sweep the nation, and they're struggling for some guidance on it.
Sure. What NFPA will do with this is our committee will develop the technical requirements that are applicable to the home, and that from a technical and installation and technology standpoint, those will be established in NFPA 72. At the same time, NFPA will be working with various organizations as well as the media to make sure that we convert that into easily understandable terms and messages so that the public can understand what's going on. Because the public, again, is seeing, as you discussed, these media demonstrations as well as mixed with technical requirements. And we want to get that to a message that the public can understand and apply in their various homes.
Okay. Well, we'll be really looking forward to that because, as I said, you know, we're just looking for some national leadership on this in terms of what do we do? You know, what do fire departments do and how do they address this? Because it's, you know, as you and I have discussed, the events are moving very quickly, and you know, people are looking for something to be able to tell people as in their response to this media.
Correct. And NFPA is, you know, wants to be the leader, and we will be. We'll be out in front and talking about this and trying to clarify things. As we learn things through our committee process, we will constantly be changing to make sure that we're providing a clear message.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Chris Dubé, who's the Vice President of Codes and Standards at NFPA. Really appreciate you joining us today, Chris, on this technical and complicated issue. There's no two ways about that.
Thanks, Ed. And I'm looking for any opportunity that we can to clear up this message and keep the public informed.
Okay. My name is Ed Camo, and you're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com.
Radio at Firehouse.com.
And joining us now on Radio at Firehouse.com is Bill Degnan, who's the New Hampshire State Fire Marshal. He's also a member of the National Association of State Fire Marshals. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Good morning, Ed.
Well, as you're aware, we've been talking about this pretty complex issue of photoelectric and ionization smoke alarms and dual sensor smoke alarms, which is a problem that fire chiefs and fire marshals across the country are facing. And, well, kind of what are they facing, Bill, and what are they doing as possible solutions in all this?
Well, Ed, this whole thing about the smoke alarms and what we're learning about the photoelectric versus ionization is of grave concern to us. But we can't discount the good that has gone on since the mid-1970s, where smoke alarms first became very prevalent in our homes. And back then, it was acceptable to have one smoke alarm. Now, we're putting a smoke alarm in just about every room in the home. But that brings up the fact is, what type of detector do we have to have in our homes that's going to protect us the best? I would think that having a dual sensing device would be giving me and my family and those people that are around me the best possible protection. But what I've learned from reading through some of the materials that are out there is that they're activating at a slower rate than just the photoelectric or the ionization detectors that stand alone.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be the best of both worlds in one unit, wouldn't you?
I would think so. And I would think that the manufacturers would be looking to see how they could come up with a detector that's going to react the same as if you had two separate detectors on your ceiling. It should, in theory, be able to be done. And if you look at what people want to have in their homes, they want just one detector up there, and they want the best possible protection for their family. And I don't think that if it's going to cost $10 more for a detector, that that's going to be a factor to the majority of the people if they're going to put one in their home. They want the protection. So we're looking to see what are we going to be recommending to our legislature in regards to the future of smoke alarms in homes. Mm-hmm. Right now, there is some confusion in regards to what should be recommended. I'd find it very difficult to bring forward a bill that's going to recommend two separate detectors in a home
mm-hmm.
when somebody's going to be asking the question about the dual sensing devices.
Right. And I think the other problem that we have, too, is that so many of these smoke alarms, yet there's so many different scenarios that we have for fires out there where, you know, you have a smoldering fire, you have a flaming fire. We know that photoelectric's better in smoldering, ionization's better in flaming. You know, from your experience, Paulie, what's the more common fire scenario out there? What do you see are the fatal fires? Are they flaming? Are they smoldering? Is it both?
The majority of our fatal fires involve smoldering type fires, and you know the people are succumbing from smoke inhalation. So that tells me that my photoelectric alarms are going to probably be better in the long run than the ionization. Although we know that thousands of people have been saved over the years from ionization detectors.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to jeopardize anybody's safety from saying one detector over another. Probably 80% of the homes have ionization detectors in them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the NIST study, you know, when they talk about both ionization and photoelectric alarms, they conclude and say that they provide enough time to save your lives under many different fire scenarios. But there's always that chance that the alarm is not going to activate in enough time, and we're always going to be thinking, what could we have done to make sure that that alarm is going to be the proper one?
Right.
You should have a photoelectric in the vicinity of your living room. If there's a smoke alarm anywhere in the vicinity of a kitchen, it should be a photoelectric.
Mm-hmm.
That reduces the nuisance alarms. That reduces the chance that somebody's going to tamper with it
mm-hmm.
and remove the smoke alarm.
And I think that's probably one of the big struggles for the manufacturer is, okay, how do we balance detection versus nuisance alarms? Because I think we all remember when smoke alarms first came out, the real nuisance problem that occurred, and people were disabling them. You know, so we've kind of reached that point of maybe a good balance, but now it's coming down to the proper type because, you know, you're absolutely right on in terms of smoke alarms we know have saved lives over the years, and we don't want people taking them out or disabling them. I mean, any smoke alarm is better than no smoke alarm. And now it's a case of, okay, what's the best kind of smoke alarm to put in there? Would you agree?
I would agree. And that's what the National Association of State Fire Marshals has been struggling with and looking at. We have a science and advisory committee that works with us that's made up of experts from across the world and across our nation that have been working with us on trying to determine what is going to be the best message to get out to people. And I guess from my personal opinion, I'm a little disappointed in the manufacturers not stepping up on something as critical as this and coming forward with trying to look at alternative ways to put the best protection out there for the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you have in the NIST report, when they talk about a photoelectric alarm that it goes off 30 minutes earlier in a smoldering type fire than an ionization, and then when you look at the ionization detector on the flaming type fire, and it goes off in 50 seconds, there's 50 seconds versus 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a big difference there in regards to the smoldering versus the flaming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need to have that protection,
right.
But you also need to have a plan so that whether or not your alarm goes off where you have a little bit less time to react and get out of the house, you need to have that escape plan so you can be familiar with what you need to do when that smoke alarm goes off.
Right. And the NIST study talks about, you know, that the smoke alarms went off before untenable conditions are reached, but also we always want to maximize that escape time because, boy, there are so many variables in there, aren't there, you know, as to what can happen.
Absolutely. I mean, we just have to look at what we put into our homes today, you know, along with our upholstered furniture, which we all know that the polyurethane foam is a serious issue that the National Association of State Fire Marshals has been pushing very hard with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. But then you look at what else do you have in the room? You have all these computer products that have plastic housings on them, and the standards for plastics are not at the level where we feel that they should be in regards to open flame ignition, so that they can be a very rapid burning fire that can ignite other things in the vicinity of the computer products.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of message is NASFAM putting out there now? You know, given the kind of different information that's out there, what are they telling their members?
Well, we're still promoting that you need to promote both types of detection, and having a good plan in place and knowing what the smoke alarms sound like and working with your families. And properly located smoke alarms is probably one of the most critical items that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Are they located properly in regards to the vicinity to a bathroom where you might have steam coming out of the bathroom door?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to affect an ionization or a photoelectric if the smoke alarm is right outside the door. So
right.
You need to have it outside of that 3-foot radius mm-hmm. of the bathroom. Anything within 20 feet of a kitchen needs to be photoelectric.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to reduce the types of nuisance alarms. The other items that come into play is we have different types of ceilings, different insulating values. So if it's a cold wall or cold ceiling,
mm-hmm.
The stratification of the smoke in the room can become, very critical as to whether that smoke alarm is ever going to see the smoke.
Right.
NASFAM is still, I think, at the same point as most everybody else when it comes to the dual sensing smoke alarms. We ask the question, why? Why are these alarms not going off when they should be?
And I take it you're not getting an answer.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Well, I do want to mention that we had invited several manufacturers to take part in this podcast, and they declined to respond to numerous requests because we wanted to find out exactly from them what is going on here, because it is a big question for a lot of people, and hopefully we can start getting some answers. I know that the NFPA has a task force report coming out within a few weeks, which should hopefully give us a lot of information as well. So, it is a rapidly evolving situation, isn't it?
It definitely is.
Yep. Well, we've been talking to Bill Degnan, who's the New Hampshire State Fire Marshal, also speaking as a representative of NASFAM, National Association of State Fire Marshals. Appreciate you joining us, Bill.
Thank you, Ed.
And you've been listening to Radio at Firehouse.com.
Radio at Firehouse.com.
Well, as you can see, this is not an easy problem to try to define and come up with a solution for. It's something that many fire departments and fire marshals across the country are struggling with. And hopefully when the NFPA report comes out, the task force report, we'll be able to get a little bit more information and have some more guidance for what you, the fire chief or the fire marshal, can tell the public as to what is the best way to provide smoke alarm protection. I think the biggest thing to emphasize, though, is any smoke detector is absolutely better than no smoke detector at all. Now it's a question of which type to have in there. We had a lot of information here today. If you look on the page below, there are some links to further information, particularly the NIST study that has some great information in there to help you and try to wrestle with this issue. So we really appreciate you listening. As I mentioned, this is a joint show this month between both Fire Marshals Corner and Campus Firewatch Radio. My name is Ed Camo, and you're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com.